evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, April 30th. I'm Sigurd Bjørn, reporting for KMOT. In tonight's news, a local environmental group sounds the alarm over proposed logging along the Matol River. Eureka's Planning Commission voices support for a new waterfront plan, and a grand jury has completed its investigation of Fort Bragg's homelessness response project. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming up. We start with this report on proposed logging on the Lost Coast. Sierra Pacific Industries is one of the largest lumber producers in the United States. Recently, the company filed a timber harvesting plan, or a THP, to harvest land owned by the company on Rainbow Ridge in Humboldt County. The Rainbow Ridge watershed is located on the Lost Coast, west of Highway 101, and drains into the Matol River. The ridge is a part of the Mendocino Triple Junction, a point where three tectonic plates meet, and is one of the most geologically active area in the world. The Triple Junction is the chief reason why the North Coast is hyperactive earthquake country. Between Rainbow Ridge and the Pacific Ocean sits the town of Petrolia. The location of the town, directly downstream from the proposed cutting area, and the instability of the geology in the area are just two of the things that have alarmed members of the Lost Coast League about the Sierra Pacific timber harvesting plan. The Lost Coast League's stated aim is to protect and preserve the public trust resources in Northern California, and specifically along the Lost Coast. We spoke to two members of the league, Michael Evanson and David Simpson, to get a better sense of their views on the Sierra Pacific harvesting plan, which is being considered for approval by CAL FIRE. Michael Evanson.
Well, part of the Lost Coast League's work is to monitor what's going on and what's coming down the road. There's a very strong presence of people who value the natural resources of the Matol watershed and North Coast. The THP was filed March 4th. And so when a plan is filed, people in our network let us know. So we look at the plan because it's available online. It's a difficult process for the public to engage, but we've kind of figured out some of the ropes to be able to see what is written in the plan and to evaluate the wisdom of proceeding with a plan which is going to disrupt the natural ecology.
At the time KMOT first spoke to the Lost Coast League, the plan had been rapidly progressing through the CAL FIRE review process, to the point where Evanson felt it was being fast-tracked without a proper review, taking into account the sensitive area the harvesting will take place in.
When we attended the second review team meeting on this plan, which is supposed to discuss issues, it was a matter of, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's.
Since then, CAL FIRE has extended the review period to May 19th because of what it calls significant new information. This extension has come as relief to residents in the Rainbow Ridge watershed, including the town of Petrolia. However, the plan is still being considered and members of the Lost Coast League continue to sound the alarm. Here is David Simpson.
It's important to understand the crucial geologic realities that we're dealing with, because this area is immediately upstream of the vaunted Triple Junction, perhaps most seismically active landscape in North America. There are literally thousands of seismic actions over the course of almost any year. So Sierra Pacific Holdings are in the middle of this incredibly active seismic area. This area is in the midst of this tremendously active area. And the lower North Fork flows out of it into its floodplain just above the town of Petrolia.
The lower North Fork Simpson talks about is a part of the Mattole River. Here is Michael Levinson.
There's no discussion of the fact that the sediment collected at the mouth of the North Fork from previous harvests, are an indication that this is an area that has to be treated differently. And the fact that they're going to clear cut 88 acres using tractors, which is the most harmful way of extracting timber from a hillside, and sure to generate sediment, which will be flooding the neighbors that downstream who are concerned, who have written letters to CAL FIRE protesting the plan. There is just that nothing in the plan documents that really address the real issues that David brought up about geology, the unconsolidated soils, the intense rainfall, the repeated seismic activity.
Clear cutting is a logging method where most or all trees in an area are uniformly cut down. Environmental groups have criticized clear cutting as destructive to water, soil, and wildlife.
Historically, some of these lands around it were intensively logged during the logging boom in the 50s and 60s. And that in itself has produced disastrous amounts of sediment, wiped out the King Salmon Run and entire lower North Fork.
You know, the plan itself doesn't really address salmon, and yet it makes kind of an offhand comment that it's not an interest. But following the logging that in the 50s and 60s, Chinook were kind of like eliminated from using the North Fork, which was one of the most productive salmon streams in the Mattole because it's close to the mouth of the river, so that the fish have easy access no matter how heavy the rains are for opening up the river for access for spawning. And recently we've been documenting Chinook use in the North Fork, and just the other day some little fingerlings, just inch-long fish appeared while we were having the salmon ceremony that were trapped in some pools, and kids put them back in the river. And, fish of that size at this time of year could only have spawned very close to the mouth of the river. So what we're seeing in the Mattole is a very slow and late recovery from the kind of blitz logging that happened in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And recovery requires that we don't add any more impacts. That's an absolute definition of cumulative impacts, that any impact is significant when the stream is still recovering.
With salmon recovery in the Mattole River taking up to 60 years, the Lost Coast League fears that history may be repeating itself with lessons not learned, were the Sierra Pacific Harvesting Plan approved unaltered. If so, it could lead to flooding, destabilization of a high-risk earthquake area, and devastation to salmon and other wildlife in the area, not to mention increased fire risk.
Clear cutting sets the landscape up for explosive fire. Logged landscapes, like clear cut especially, are the ones that is rapid spread, danger for firefighters. The fire goes in all directions and becomes much larger in very short time.
David Simpson.
Clear cutting 88 acres in the most unstable landscape, perhaps in North America, in a time when catastrophic fire threatens, due to climate change, threatens the health and welfare of the entire society, just doesn't make sense. And there are alternatives. There are even age management systems that can be applied here. And we welcome Sierra Pacific to join with the community, which is threatened.
We actually would like to reach out to SBI to come up with a really sustainable plan for managing those lands that that allows us to recover our salmon for the people that live here, as well as to have them be able to produce timber because people do use wood, and there's going to be some trees that are going to have to be harvested to keep housing going. That's why we think CAL FIRE and SBI and the residents here have to get together and come up with a real plan, and not just a fire plan, but a living plan for them at all.
Simpson and Evanson encouraged the public to reach out to CAL FIRE before the public comment deadline on May 19th.
What we would like is for the comments coming from the public to wake CAL FIRE up, to put the brakes on this plan so that it can be reformulated to be one in which it's truly sustainable and lessens any impact on the precious resources that we depend.
That was Michael Evanson, who, along with David Simpson, spoke to KMUCH Lauren Schmidt. You can find information on how to reach out to CAL FIRE on our website, kmuch.org. Daniel Mintz brings us this report on plans for Eureka's waterfront.
Eureka's Planning Commission is recommending approval of the Waterfront Eureka Plan, which sets zoning regulations, development standards, and design guidelines for the 130 acres making up the city's northern waterfront. With the Commission's support of the plan and its environmental review, the City Council will take it up at its May 6th meeting. The Commission did its review last week. The plan has emerged from years of public scoping on how the city's bayfront, Old Town, downtown, and library areas should be developed and redeveloped. The city's waterfront area has specific rules and standards under the plan, which Community Development Services Director Kristen Kenyon described as a different approach than seen with the current uniform zoning that covers both the commercial waterfront and Old Town districts.
Right now, the commercial bayfront and Old Town have the same zoning. We are proposing to give Old Town its own district. The big difference is that the bayfront districts allow and prioritize coastal dependent and related uses like fishing and boating, in addition to visitor serving recreational uses. We are also proposing to divide the commercial bayfront into two zoning districts, the bayfront commercial and bayfront flex. They both allow a similar mix of uses, but the difference is form. The BC is envisioned as an extension of Old Town's multi-story mixed-use development, whereas the BF district allows for greater flexibility in building intensity and form. It can accommodate larger single-use developments like RV parks. The third big change is that we are proposing that the library district get its own unique zoning district, distinct from other office residential areas of the city, and we're proposing for that district to be a blend of office residential and neighborhood commercial.
The Old Town and Bayfront commercial zoning districts include streets designated for pedestrian-focused frontages, with standards that apply to street-facing ground floors of new development. The pedestrian frontages also include prohibition of street-facing residential uses, but that's waived for high-density residential development. On streets not designated as pedestrian-focused, standards such as prohibiting parking between buildings and streets apply. Commissioner Michael Kraft asked Kenyon about the plan's overall effects.
So I'm not a libertarian, but I have a little guy that lives inside me that I let out once in a while. And he wants to ask, what freedoms are gained and lost if we adopt this plan, if the city adopts this plan as written?
In terms of the regulations, a good place to look for in the housing chapter, there's a section about removing regulatory barriers to housing, and it refers to the standards and guidelines in Chapter 4 and has the bulleted list of like a dozen ways the regulations are removing, the regulatory changes are removing barriers to housing. Our current regulations were adopted in the 1980s, and they're from the 1960s, and they're suburban, sprawl, auto-centric, single-use regulations that aren't meant, they were meant for like new development, not traditional grid pattern of mixed-use multi-story buildings. So this zoning is more in line with modern best practice.
The state's Coastal Commission will have to certify the plan, and the commission has standards for coastal development that might not jibe with the plan, like prioritizing coastal-dependent uses. The commission's approach to regulation was discussed in this exchange between Commissioner Michael Benson and Kenyon.
Like, what would you think there'd be their biggest reservation for okaying this plan?
The not prioritizing enough the visitor serving, coastal dependent, coastal related uses. Like in the commercial bayfront, those are the uses that are principally permitted. And offices and residents have to be above and behind another primary use. I think they would probably prefer that to be above or behind a priority use, not just any primary use. I shouldn't have said that out loud.
I'm just curious as to why they would have any reservations for this plan. I mean, to me, this plan is, I love it. It's deregulating situations where it makes it hard for people to add housing, because that's one of our main issues currently is housing.
The hearing was sparsely attended, which was noted during a public comment period by Greg Pearson, who owns the Bayfront One mixed-use building at the foot of F Street. He questioned the meeting's noticing. Kenyon said noticing was handled as usual, but pre-hearing media coverage didn't materialize as it has for other recent planning efforts, which she attributed to fatigue from the many design charrette, community workshop, and stakeholder meetings that have been held over the last several years. The commission unanimously voted to recommend approval of the plan and its environmental document, an addendum to the environmental impact report for the 2040 general plan, which blueprints development of 1,886 new residential units. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In Mendocino, a Fort Bragg grand jury has commended authorities for their approach to homelessness. KCYX's Elise Cox reports.
A grand jury has completed its investigation of the City of Fort Bragg's Homelessness Response Project, known as the Care Response Unit, or CRU. The project was first launched in 2022. Despite positive reports in the local media about the program, at least one county administrator expressed reservations. Here's Janine Miller, Health Services Director for the County of Mendocino, speaking at a Board of Supervisors meeting in September last year. In the recording, Miller has just been asked if she thinks CRU should be put in place countywide.
I think I need to see more about that model. I've heard, I think there are some benefits. One of the things that someone said to me is that they've seen a 225% increase in arrest in Fort Bragg since that team started. And that I'm just, this is data that's been given to me. I haven't seen it, and I haven't been able to ask the chief about it. It was recently said to me.
A recommendation was made for the Mendocino County Grand Jury to look into the program. The program emphasizes repeated contact with outreach workers who offer help in the form of food, shelter, medical assistance, counseling, and temporary housing, all typically without the intervention of an officer. In an interview with KZYX last year, Chief Cervenka said the approach frees up officers to address more serious crimes. Cervenka also provided data that showed arrests seemingly related to homelessness had dropped dramatically.
So of total arrests from 2019, where we were at over 54% of total arrests were of homeless people, year-to-date in 2024, we're at 17.8%. So that's a dramatic, dramatic shift that the community feels, that the police officers feel, because they're no longer dealing with petty crimes or social issues.
The grand jury found the approach to be effective in helping homeless individuals get the services they needed. Indeed, in the conclusion of the report, the grand jury commended the city of Fort Bragg for, quote, designing and implementing a workable, friendly, and vitally essential program, end quote.
We welcomed the investigation, as we welcome any insight into our department and our operations.
That's Fort Bragg Police Chief Neil Cervenka.
This was a very ingenious program. The initial start of it was progressive and outside the box. And we didn't know if we were going to succeed or fail in the beginning, but it has become a great success. And the grand jury and their independent investigation showed what Fort Bragg PD is doing is correct.
One of the few criticisms that the grand jury had of the program was that individuals who decline services frequently leave the city limits, basically shifting the problem from the city to the county. Fort Bragg's response to this has been to get funding to implement the program further down the coast, and specifically in the village of Mendocino. On Monday night, the police department held an outreach meeting in the village about the program. Supervisor Ted Williams attended.
I was pleased to see the city of Fort Bragg bringing their outstanding crew program in effect as far south as the town of Mendocino. I had been advocating for this for some time, and this is the first step. It's funded by the state under Prop 47 with about 42 months of funding.
Williams would like for the program to continue expanding further south, deeper into his district.
Captain O'Neill talked a little bit last night about some of the challenges. He mentioned a possible future partnership with Point Arena as a stretch goal. And there's some other pieces they need in place. They need an officer nearby, right? They're sending people who are social service liaisons, no badge, no gun. And of course, we don't want to send them into situations where they actually need law enforcement. So I think it's important that they have a law enforcement partner nearby. But I'm hopeful that this becomes the model countywide.
In state news, Health Access California and other advocacy groups that fight for greater access to healthcare have unveiled a package of legislative priorities they say will bolster healthcare in the Golden State.
Groups that advocate for better access to health care have introduced what they call Care for All California, a package of 13 bills designed to shore up the health system as the state braces for the possibility of huge cuts in federal funding for Medi-Cal. The bills aim to get more people insured, connect them to care, and make health care more affordable, says Chris Noble, organizing director for the nonprofit Health Access California.
These priorities will continue to cover gaps within our healthcare system, ensure that when people are denied or delayed care, there's certain accountability, or ensure that folks are getting access to accurate and up-to-date provider directories.
One bill would make sure people with Medicare supplemental insurance can't be penalized for having pre-existing conditions. Another would require hospitals to pre-screen all patients to see if they are eligible for discounted or charity care programs. A third bill would allow undocumented people access to health plans on the covered California exchange. Opponents cite cost concerns. Noble says the bills build on progress California has made to lower its uninsured rate.
It's crucial that our state legislature shows their commitment to advancing a universal, affordable, and equitable healthcare system. This year's package of legislative and budget priorities requires no interventions by the federal government and should be adopted to safeguard our healthcare system in case there are federal attacks.
Advocates have also made a number of budget requests, including one that would give kids who qualify for Medi-Cal continuous coverage from birth to age 5, rather than making their parents reapply every year.
That was Susan Potter, who also brings us this report on efforts to curtail Prop 12, which sets minimum space requirements for certain farm animals.
Republican lawmakers have recently introduced the Food Security and Farm Protection Act. It's an attempt to repeal California's landmark animal welfare law, known as Proposition 12. Prop 12 sets minimum space requirements for breeding pigs, egg-laying hens, and veal calves, and bans the sale of meat raised in non-compliant settings. Rebecca Wolf with the nonprofit Food and Water Watch says Prop 12 has been under assault since it passed in 2018.
This has been the big ag playbook for quite a while. Big ag doesn't want to be told what to do by states. And so it puts Republicans in a really interesting position that pits them kind of between big ag and more of a states' rights framework.
Some conservatives don't want to see Prop 12 repealed, saying that would infringe on state sovereignty. And many farmers support the law because they've already made big investments to comply. The National Pork Producers Council, however, opposes Prop 12, calling it burdensome government overreach. Wolf says Prop 12 also allows space for independent producers to offer niche products and charge a premium for meats raised using more humane practices.
This is part of that conversation, and it's not just about animal welfare standards, but the infrastructure under which food production happens today.
Prop 12 has already survived several lawsuits and multiple attempts to kill it legislatively. A repeal was part of the EATS Act in the 2024 federal farm bill, which remains stalled in Congress. This story was produced with original reporting from Seth Milstein for Sentient. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Elise Cox, and Susan Potter. My name is Sigurd Bjørn. Thank you for listening.
KMED News is online. You can find us on kmed.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commute. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmed.org. For KMED, I'm Christine Alexandria. Thank you for listening.